Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. With us, special guest, Sean Gold, who's we stole him from Sean's take. How we doing, Sean?
Jim, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here. Excited to, you know, get back into some four quarters talk and cover some pretty interesting topics today with you.
That is it exactly. For those who are wondering, typically we have Dustin Schutte on this week. Dustin is all tied up into NCAA basketball. He's at the Big Ten tournament this week. Next week, he'll be following the NCAA tournament, and he'll be traveling. So unavailable for a couple weeks. And I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to bring Sean in. And I mentioned Sean's take. That's Sean's show, which we're going to be introducing to the Keystone Sports Network. And we're using these couple weeks that Dustin Schutte is off to introduce Sean. And just to give you a brief outline, as we'll be doing Sean's take every week, we're going to hit more than just college sports, aren't we, Sean?
We definitely will. So, you know, to all the listeners, I hope you guys tune in with us when we do get rolling with Sean's take again. And I hope we bring you some exciting topics that, you know, you might not be typically listening to on a week-to-week basis, but we'll dive into the NFL, the NBA, and all of the above, really.
Well, there's a lot going on in the rest of the sports world. It's off season for college football. So let's hit a few of these things that I know the listeners are talking about a bit. Let's start with this. This is a bit unusual for this show, but the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, Sean, this has been going on for a while now, been gaining momentum. And I'm just curious, are you following it? Do you care?
I'm a little disappointed to say this, but I have not been watching the games. I have indeed checked up on the scores, checked up on how USA is doing, who's performing well, but I haven't been as invested as I anticipated being in it, Jim.
You know what? You're missing out, my friend. It took me a while. I'll admit, like the other one, they are on every 3 years. They do them during spring training because they're relying on major league players being part of this. And what I'm finding is baseball, Major League Baseball, it's a marathon. Mm-hmm. 160 games. You don't get up too much. You don't get down too much. You can't. The best teams lose a third of their games, okay? And that's the best teams. They lose 60 games a year at least. So, but here, Sean, it's a sprint. And you have players playing for their country, especially the Latin American teams. Their fan bases are so excited. Watching these games, it's like watching a football game, a college football game with the fan. They care, Sean. They're passionate about it.
It is. And that's the part that I think is amazing about this tournament is it's very different than your 101st regular season game where if you win or lose, guess what? It really doesn't mean anything if you win or lose that game. So it is nice watching meaningful baseball. And I know as, you know, as we get into the knockout stages and everything, it's only going to get better. So I will make, you know, definitely an effort to tune in more. I think it's been hard for me just, I've been so invested in the NBA and into college basketball getting ready for March Madness that my brain just hasn't shifted over to baseball yet, but I need to start doing that.
Well, it's a good primer to get into baseball because every time they do this, more and more of the big time players get involved. And what's I think fun is this is not just waiting for the American team to win because they've won once so far. The defending champion is Japan, And with Ohtani and some of those great Japanese pitchers they have, they're not the favorite. Maybe they're the co-favorite, because the American team has it, it's an all-star team with the Americans. You also have, if you get a chance, go look at the Dominican Republic lineup. It's incredible, mm-hmm. just incredible. They are such an exciting team to watch. But it's like the American team seems to, every time this comes about, they're getting more and more into it. And the manager, Mark DeRosa, for the American team, his biggest job is recruiting, okay? He did it by saying, I'm going to bring in the superstar player, Aaron Judge. I'm going to bring in the superstar pitcher, Paul Skenes, and then build around those two. And he accomplished that goal. This is a tremendous American team.
He definitely did. And, you know, it's nice to see people care about it, because there were times, you know, in the past where, you know, I'm getting ready for my season. I'm not going to go and play for this. We've seen the same thing with USA basketball at times, you know, besides the Olympics, a lot of times people just don't care. And is it worth it for me to show up to this, play extra games that I don't need to play? So it is nice to see when you have Aaron Judge and Paul Skenes leading the way. If you're another star player, you're kind of saying, I don't want to miss out on this opportunity. This is a pretty cool, unique opportunity for me to play with two of the best players in the world and have a bunch of other incredible players all on the same team. It is like an all-star team, but you're really playing meaningful games with these guys.
Well, I have to bring in Salty Jim here, okay? I can't go through this segment completely all upbeat. And where I'm headed with this is Tarek Skubal. He and Paul Skenes are the two best pitchers in baseball, okay? One and 1A, take your pick which one you like. It was a huge announcement when Tarek Skubal said he was also going to pitch. Well, then a few weeks ago, he announces, Sean, you know what? He's only going to pitch one game. And that's in the initial round robin round, where the American team is pretty much guaranteed to advance beyond that. He's going to pitch one game against Great Britain, where, Sean, you could have started this game and the Americans would not have lost, okay? And he's only going to pitch three innings. That's it. He did it. They blasted Great Britain. They would have blasted Great Britain whether he was there or not. And now he's going back to Detroit, Detroit spring training. And Sean, here's my issue with it. If he had said right from the start he's not going to play, he's in a contract year, meaning he's going to get paid after this season, become a free agent. Any risk of injury, you know, he's going to lose generational money. I get that. But don't stick one foot in the water and that's it. Then after he pitched, he says, gee, I loved it. This was great. Maybe I will come back and pitch a second game. Only to announce the next day, no, he's not. Maybe he'll show up for the finals and sit on the bench. Sean, that drives me absolutely crazy. If all you're going to do is pitch three innings in a meaningless game, Tarek, don't even bother. That's my take.
I am completely with you on that. I 100,000% understand that he does not want to mess up this MLB season. Because like you said, he's going into a contract year. He's been the best pitcher in the world for the past couple years. He is going to get a historic contract if he stays healthy throughout this season. So I understand not wanting to jeopardize anything that could impact his future. And he could also look at it and say, hey, I'll have my shot in the Olympics in a couple years too, and I'll be the ace there, and I'll pitch my heart out, and I'll go seven innings a start. Sure. But do not do what you just outlined. I'm going to do a couple innings here. I'm going to go home. Actually, maybe I'll do a little bit more. Maybe I'll sit on the bench and support, but I'm not going to pitch. It's like you're in or you're out. And there's other guys here who are acknowledging that because I'm playing extra games right now, I am at a risk of injuring myself or something, some freak accident happening. But that's something I'm willing to take because I want to be with the guys in the locker room. And I want to do this for my country on the biggest world stage in baseball right now. you're either in or you're out, and he clearly is not in. So just get out. He should have never pitched at all. He should have just stayed home in Detroit, focused on what he claims he wants to focus on. But instead it was like, well, I want this experience of playing with all these guys. They're all incredible. It's one of the best teams ever put together. So I want my name in that, but I don't really want to be in it. And I don't like that. I'm 100% with you.
He wants the rewards without the risk. And there's not a great risk. And I'm saying this as a Mets fan who had their closer, Edwin Diaz, get injured in the WBC 3 years ago, celebrating, okay? He was out for the season because of a celebration. He messed up his knee jumping up and down in celebration. Now, my concern for this is they're playing before the regular season starts in the major leagues. It's during spring training. So these players, especially the pitchers, they ramped up a little bit early. My only health concern for the pitchers is if you're a veteran pitcher, you're going to throw innings in spring training anyway, okay? Now, I do understand the difference is this is a little bit more high-intensity games. So you're more tempted to throw harder, that type of thing. If you're a veteran pitcher, you should know how to control that, okay? I'm a huge Mets fan. The Mets have two pitchers there. One is Clay Holmes, a veteran. He changed from relief pitcher to starter for the Mets. He's pitching in relief, non-standard, but you know what? I trust the veteran guy to know his body, know what he can do, what he can't do. What the only one that scares me is Mets have a rookie phenom, Nolan McClain, who is involved. And if things fall correctly, he will be pitching the final. Talk about high impact games. That scares me a bit as a Met fan that he's going to try to overthrow.
Yeah, I think that's one of the concerns there. But like you said, for Scooble, could you not fit your normal ramp up right into this? I mean, the time you'd be playing in these games anyway. So that was my initial thought, was stick to your normal schedule. I'm sure they can accommodate that. And for whatever reason, he thinks they can't, but I would disagree with that. I think that you can get your normal rest while pitching in the World Baseball Classic.
Exactly. He pitched three innings the first round robin, pitched four innings, maybe at max out at five, what he would be doing in spring training anyway. All right, Sean, that's it for quarter number one. When we come back, we're going to talk the NCAA tournament. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number two of our show. Sean sitting in for Dustin Schutte over the next several weeks. First of all, Sean, absolutely fantastic to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, of course. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here talking sports.
Well, we talked WBC baseball in the first segment. Now we're gonna hit your sweet spot a little bit more in this segment. We're gonna talk NCAA tournament. Sean, this week is time for the conference tournaments. Next week they'll start up the NCAA tournament. Is there a better sports event in the world than the NCAA tournament?
You know, it's hard pressed to find one. And college basketball is not my favorite sport. I'm an NFL, NBA, MLB guy. But you don't have to like regular season college basketball to get invested into March Madness. There's no better tournament in the world.
You know, there was a time when I was heavy duty into regular season even. when I lived in Philadelphia, and Sean, Big Five basketball, which was all the Villanova, Temple, St. Joe's, LaSalle, Penn, it was great. We also had Princeton not far away. We there were so many schools within the Philadelphia area. Even Cheney State, or now Cheney University, by the way, ironically, John Cheney coached there before he coached at Temple. So there was so much good basketball. Drexel was the school I was thinking of also being there. So much good hoops at the time. Now, even though I'm not quite as into the regular season, I think a little bit of that has to do with Penn State and their inability to be a contender in the Big Ten. It makes it tougher, but still, come March Madness, what is it about March Madness that makes it just such a great spectator sport?
I think it's the fact that you have a field big enough where, unlike, I'll compare it more to the first rendition of college football playoffs, four teams, you always felt like there was somebody that should have been there that's not there. March Madness, 64 teams. I mean, if you didn't get in the top 64, don't complain about too much, because you had ample opportunity to find a way to get a bid into this tournament. So I think it's the fact that you see so many different teams play. And I mean, coming from me, when I was at Yale, we made March Madness two or three times when I was there. And it's like, what an opportunity for a school that nobody watches their games to see it pull off an upset against Auburn, who was one of the favorites to win the whole thing that year. You know, and there's opportunities like that that you get in March Madness that you just don't get in other tournaments. And you see the Cinderella stories, you see the 12 seeds are a very popular upset a lot of times. You see a 16 seed, I think they beat Virginia a couple of years ago. It's like, you just don't get that in other sport tournaments. And March Madness, one game, you hit the shots, you're going to win a game eventually. And anything can truly happen on a March Madness court.
Well, next week, Sean, we'll actually make some specific picks. But looking at it now, before we even get into the conference tournaments, looking at the top of the tournament, Duke, Michigan, Arizona appear to be locks for number one seeds. I know they're dealing with some injuries. I can't see them not knocking any of them out of the number one seeds. Who else is there? Who's got that fourth number one seed in your mind?
So I don't necessarily know if they'll get a number one seed or if there'll be a number two seed, but I saw a very cool breakdown on Twitter that I'm excited to share with everybody. So apparently there's five teams this year that can win the March Madness tournament based off of some historical metrics. Duke, Michigan, Arizona, Florida, you named four of them. The fifth team, Jim. 22 of the last 23 March Madness champions were top 20 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. So unless you're going to be the one team in the last 23 years that didn't cover that metric, you're looking like you're in a pretty good spot. So like I said, Duke, Michigan, Arizona, and Florida, as you mentioned, as number one seeds, all fit that bill. Do you know who that fifth team would be off the top of your head?
Oh, geez. I'll go, how about Houston?
Bingo. Houston's the team. I think a lot of people might think UConn would be in that. Surprisingly, they're not. I think we all think UConn's a legitimate contender and they have a proven tracker. But Houston is that other team that's top 20 in offensive and defensive efficiency. So if I had to put a team into that number one conversation, it'd undoubtedly be Houston. And I think, we all know from recent years just how good Houston's defense is. Like, they are a defensive team and they slow a game down. But there's been games where I've been very impressed with their offense this year. So I think that they're an incredibly dangerous team, a team that's capable of being in that Duke, Michigan, Arizona, Florida conversation.
You know, Sean, we all have our, tournament pools to fill out. That's always fun, filling out the bracket, picking out that number one team, the winner. And there's also a bit of a science or maybe an art to doing that. Do you pick one of those very top teams, but then you compete with everybody else picking those teams? Do you pick a dark horse? But what I think is more interesting in betting in the tournament are individual games to look at. And I guess as someone who gives out help in that area and making your wagers, who you're betting on, what is it you're looking for when you're looking at matchups in the tournament?
Yeah, it's a million-dollar question right there with that. One thing I'd say, I guess, kind of picking back off of what I said is, you know, look at the offensive and defensive efficiencies. A lot of times, you know, in the tournament, when push comes to shove, I like to lean a little bit more defense. If you're a team that can really lock somebody down, going up against a streaky three-point shooting team, if you have great perimeter defense, you can affect their whole offensive game plan and get yourself a win there. The other thing that I really like to look at is look back at the strength of schedule. Like, what teams have beaten good teams? Because sometimes you'll have a 12 or 13 seed who, yeah, hey, they should lose this game. They're double-digit underdogs. But wait, they beat four top 25 teams throughout the regular season and just were very inconsistent. So I always like to see, like, who did you play? Who did you beat? Who did you lose to? Were you a team that played Michigan and lost by 50? Or were you a team that played Michigan and lost by 7 in the regular season? Like, that tells me a lot on, are you capable of stepping up when the moment's biggest against good competition? And then another thing I really like to look at is which power conference teams are just simply overrated. Big Ten, SEC, the name still holds a lot of weight when you get to seeding. And sometimes there's teams that just don't deserve to be favorites in their game. So I think that's where you kind of look for upsets. And of course, it's March Madness. You always want to be open to picking an underdog.
Well, there's the other thing is that, where are you looking for? Are there, you know, you go to a conference and go to the big conferences. The Big 12 is very good. Southeast Conference is very good. Big 10 is very good. Obviously, those teams have played a tough regular season schedule because of the conference games. They have to. Versus you have the mid-majors, those conferences, where are you picking for the upsets? Are those teams maybe, they've got veteran teams because they don't have players moving on? Is there some kind of trend, something that you look for in a matchup?
You know, I wouldn't say that there's an exact trend that I really look for. I always want to see one, you know, when you do research, you can see like where the public is on all these bets as well, if you really dive into it. And sometimes you'll see just the big names get a lot of public backing. But then if you go and look into the matchup, you can kind of find the inefficiencies of these teams. So you always want to find a team that, you know, what underdog team matches up well against somebody. You can look at the pace. You can look at, you know, are they a great three-point shooting team? A lot of times great three-point shooting teams don't go very far in March Madness if that's all they can do. I know a couple years ago, Creighton was, they lived and died by the three-point. BYU, I think a couple years ago, lost in the first round. They were a three-point shooting team. And they can put up 100 points, but if they're not hitting their threes, they're going to put up 60 points. So those are kind of things that I'll look at and try to find, well, are you a great three-point shooting team going against a team that doesn't allow that? And if you don't allow that, think, how else can you find your points? And there's some teams where it's like, hey, if they're not hitting threes, I don't know how they're going to score. So there's things like that, and it takes a bit of research to really get into it. But those are some of the things I would look at is, you know, don't just look at, oh, what did they do, you know, the last five games of the regular season? Like, what is the core of this team? How do they match up against the core of, you know, the team they're playing?
And I think there's often matchups that are intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I remember in this, I'm going back many years. I don't know if you'll remember Nolan Richardson coaching at Arkansas. And he put out a team. He called his defense 40 minutes of hell. Okay, they were aggressive, start to finish, very athletic. Penn State had a good team, but they could not match up athletically. I saw that first matchup. I hated it, and sure enough, it didn't go the way a Penn State fan would want it to go. So matchups are part of it. But my question to you is, before the tournament starts, before we see any matchups, are there any teams you're kind of looking forward to see play that you think might perform better than their ranking?
Yeah, I've got a couple written down. And to be honest, there's no guarantee these teams even make the tournament, depending on how they do in conference championship play. But one is going to be UCLA. Not just talking about the hometown team here, but They beat Illinois. They beat Purdue. They beat Oregon, narrowly lost to a very good Indiana team. And I think, you know, they've showed that they can beat top-ranked teams, so I wouldn't be surprised if they got in, if they're a team that could win two or three games, pull off some upsets. They're not winning March Madness by any means. They're not making the Final Four, but they could pull off a couple upsets. Really quick, Cincinnati's another team. I think they've had some good wins. They beat Kansas at Kansas. They manhandled BYU, who was once regarded as one of the top teams in the country. And I think Cincy would have been a lot better in the regular season if it weren't for their point guard, Jizzle James, missing over a month of the season. When he's in the lineup, they're a very good team. So those are two, like, true sleeper teams. And then from a ranked team that just isn't getting enough credit, I think Michigan State is a great team, and I think they can go on a run. They've got Tom Izzo. You know, the history is there. Michigan State's a very, very good team.
And I'm glad you mentioned Tom Izzo, because I think where there are teams that have recent experience, recent success in the tournament, like you mentioned UConn, Houston, those are teams that have recently excelled, which means they've had coaches who have been there. And, you know, Tom Izzo has been there. Talk about a team that plays defense, rebounds. You don't even have to see Michigan State. You just know by reputation. All right, Sean, I'm not done with the NCAA tournaments. Got a couple more questions for you. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold, sitting in for the next couple weeks for Dustin Schutte, who's following the NCAA tournament. Great to have you, Sean. And speaking of the tournament, when we finished up quarter number two, we were talking about the NCAA tournament coming up, teams that you might like. You brought up some interesting names, teams like UCLA, Michigan State, a couple of Big Ten teams. I follow Big Ten hoops a bit. I'm going to give you a couple names from the Big Ten. And I like, well, let me start with this. Let me start with Purdue. Now, Purdue, I think going into the season, was one of the top teams in the country considered that way. They look like it. Boy, the second half of the season has not shown it at all. Now, they're going to be a tournament team, but I get the feeling, Sean, that they have the tools to maybe reach a Final Four. They just haven't shown it over this last half of the season. So I get the feeling they're going to be one of those teams. There's no in between. They're either going to get knocked out early, a continuation of this poor play at the end of the season, or they're going to make a run. What do you think?
I completely agree with that. It's one of those teams where, yeah, they have the talent and capabilities to win this entire thing. And if Purdue was in the Final Four a month down the line, would we be shocked? Absolutely not. If Purdue didn't make it out of the first or second round, would we be shocked? Absolutely not. So it's funny, you know, they kind of remind me of some, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, some of the Kentucky teams that were just,
yes,
man, they can destroy any team in the field, but they'll also lose in the first round because they just don't show up that day. That is absolutely Purdue this year.
It is. And so that's the kind of team I kind of look at. And I'll give the other name that I had within the Big Ten is Nebraska. Again, kind of team that could disappoint. Remember I mentioned earlier, several years ago, Penn State played Arkansas. And it was just a bad, bad matchup for them. Arkansas, the way they played, their athleticism, their defense just made it difficult for them. I think Nebraska is vulnerable to that kind of matchup, but they also are the kind of team that does all the little things right. They move the ball well. They find the open shot. They play team basketball. I think they're going to be a tough out for somebody.
I think so too. And just as you started talking about them, I pulled up their schedule. I mean, a 75-72 loss to Michigan, that's a very good loss to have in college basketball. And they also, you know, they beat Indiana, who people really like. They beat Oregon, who's not a major team, but Oregon's a sleeper team for a lot of people. Lost to Illinois, went 1-1 against Illinois, actually. So they've had good wins along the way, and they are another team. Like, you get hot, they definitely have the capabilities to be able to win some games in this tournament. But like you said, the wrong matchup can also send them home very early. But I will say, I mean, second in the Big Ten, I think they're one of the quietest, you know, 15-5 conference plays teams in the country, really, because they had a good schedule and they handled it pretty well.
And 26-5 overall. The interesting thing is looking at these teams and their records against ranked opponents, Michigan, for example, 8-1 against ranked teams. Okay, that's phenomenal. There's a reason why Michigan is the number three ranked team in the country. And if you look at Duke and Arizona, you'll see something similar. Where I'm headed with this, Sean, is it's been interesting over the last couple weeks, some of the conversation about Miami of Ohio. Mm-hmm. They're a MAC team, ranked 20th, and they're 31-0. They're undefeated. So there's been talk. Bruce Pearl, Auburn coach, brought this up. If Miami doesn't win their conference championship, they shouldn't be in the tournament because of their schedule. Well, what does their schedule look like? They do not have a game against a ranked opponent. So, Sean, where do you fall on this one?
It's so difficult. And, I mean, strength of schedule definitely does matter. But I also want to preface, going 31-0 is not easy no matter who you're playing. And they're playing teams that were supposed to be even level competition to them because they're in the same conference and they still found a way to go undefeated. So I would be upset if they are not in the tournament, even if they don't win their conference just because of how good a regular season goes. But I also completely understand it, that it's just like in football, you play in the SEC, you play in the Big Ten, you're going to lose more games than maybe a Mountain West team who could run through their schedule. So I get both sides, but I personally would like to still see them in the tournament and see them have a chance, because no matter who they played, the regular season was unbelievable.
Well, that's it. There's enough good basketball played at the mid-conference level that these aren't gimmies. You know, I think you could take some really, really good major conference teams, put them in the MAC, and they won't necessarily go undefeated. They'd probably win it, but going undefeated is something special and something that doesn't happen all the time. The other part to it, Sean, is the ability for some of these mid-major teams to schedule games against the Power Four teams, better teams, because guess what? Those teams don't want to play a good MAC team. They'll bring in a bad MAC team. They don't want to play Miami because there's a threat for a loss there. And a win doesn't mean anything, but a loss means you lost to a MAC conference team.
100%. And with all that taken into account, I think it shows that they're a team that deserves to be there. They're a team that could pull off an upset in the tournament. And I hope for their sake, they just go and win their conference so that it's not even a debate. But if for whatever reason they don't, and I think they actually may be favored to not win their conference too. I think I saw something on that they're a slight second place, you know, projected finish there. But regardless, you know, there's enough spots to go around in the tournament. I think they deserve a spot.
I do too. You go undefeated through the regular season, and you start to wonder, and you know, going through these, I'm looking at the MAC conference standings right now. Akron is 17-1 in the in conference, 26-5 overall. And by the way, they've only played one, you know, ranked team. So the point that you make, I think, is valid. Now, might you have a situation where you could go look at the Big Ten and look at a team middle of the road in the conference, you know, like Ohio State, say, or Iowa, Indiana. Indiana has a 9-11 record in conference. But if Indiana played Miami, is there a good chance Indiana would win the game? Sure, sure. But I don't think that's how you do this. This is not how you pick the tournament. And an undefeated regular season, I think, needs the reward of making the tournament. And I'm pretty confident Miami would make the tournament, even if they lose in conference. Bruce Pearl, I think, is an outlier with what he's saying. Mm-hmm. But it also brings up, these are what makes these matchups interesting. I'm really going to pay attention to Miami early in the tournament when they're most likely going to have a matchup against a major conference team.
100%. And it's a, you know, it's a great opportunity to showcase you either deserved or did not deserve this bid. Like, it takes me back to, you know, a couple years ago, Florida State in the college football playoffs didn't get it. And then they went and got manhandled in their bowl game. And it's like, well, how are you going to do that but complain that you didn't get the top four spot? So it's going to be the same principle here. Like, if Miami of Ohio, for whatever reason, doesn't win their conference but gets into the tournament, all of a sudden the pressure's on them to showcase, hey, we do deserve to be here. And you know, they then need to go and upset somebody so they can say, you know, we weren't some, you know, 31-0 fluke who played nobody. Like, this is a good basketball team. So there's pressure on both sides. And you also don't want to be the team that loses to them, because then it's like saying, we complained about you even being here, and what's that make us look like now that we lost to you? So it's going to be an exciting matchup and a game I'm sure everybody will be tuning into.
And we also have within the tournament, it took years and years before we had a number 16 seed beat a number one seed, but it's now happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the reality of the talent being spread around. But Sean, you alluded to it earlier, that 12-5 row. It seems like every year we get a 12 seed winning a game against the number 5 seed. Any theory on why that happens?
I don't know. I'd have to look more into like what constitute a 12 seed. Are they a team that just didn't win their conference but was still, you know, ranked throughout the season? And I don't even know if it's that, but I don't know what goes into the 12 seed formula, but it's a pretty good formula there. And I can almost guarantee we'll see at least probably one or two of the 12 seeds win this year. Like, if you go a year without a 12 seed winning, it's like, what is March Madness all of a sudden? How did a 12 seed not win even though they're not supposed to?
Well, let me give you my take on it. I'm not sure it's as much about the 12 seed as it is about the 5 seed.
I like that.
I think you're reaching the point where, you know, if you do the math, like the seeding, there's four teams on each seeding, 1, 2, 3. And once you get to the 5th seed, you're getting down to about the 20th best team in the country. And I think once you get to there, you know, if you get from 20, probably 20 through 50 even, mm-hmm. you know, throw them in a hat. Maybe it's not quite that way, but I think that's where you start to get a number 5 seed who's not particularly great. And you get a 12 team that, you know what, that might be maybe a 10 seed, a 9 seed, and a 5 seed that could have been a 6 or 7 seed. And all of a sudden you have a matchup that's pretty equal. So go ahead.
I think those are much more, you get into a toss-up stage after you get out of like the first 15 teams in college basketball. And I think you just nailed it right there with that point.
Yeah, I think that's it. All right, Sean, that's it for quarter three. When we come back, let's get a little closer to home. We're talking about basketball. how about we talk about Penn State basketball? I know, not a pretty topic, but the question is, where do you go from here if you're Penn State Hoops?
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim, he's Sean. We've been talking well, sports other than college football. It's been kind of fun to hit into the other items. And, Sean, we spent the last two segments talking about the NCAA basketball tournament, one of the great sporting events of the year, March Madness. It's phenomenal. It's great. Penn State basketball is nowhere to be seen in that list. Just to set the stage a little bit here, Penn State basketball, men's and women's. Penn State, they fired the women's coach. She was there for 7 years, had one winning season in 7 years, never got the team to the NCAA tournament. It was due, maybe even overdue. Now switching over to the men's team, Mike Rhodes, who I've met, interviewed a couple times. I like him. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a good coach. It just hasn't been happening, though, for Penn State basketball. He's now through 3 years at Penn State. Record has gotten worse each season, and it just bottomed out this past year, bottom of the Big Ten Conference, three conference wins. That's it. By the time you listen to this, they may or may not have played their first round of a Big Ten tournament. And it kind of leads to, Sean, how you make that decision of letting a coach go, especially in this era of NIL and direct player compensation. Are you a team that is, you know, has the budget to put out a good team? That's now one of the questions.
And then that's exactly what I was going to say. I think if you're, you know, the athletic director at Penn State needing to make this decision, you have to ask yourself, do I think Mike Rhodes is a really good coach? Yes or no? And if you think yes, you can put behind how this year went, how the last couple of years went, and say, no, I think this is a great basketball coach. Now we need to tool this coach with the resources to build a successful program in today's day and age, because you can go move on to another coach. And unless he's got other connections and just a master at recruiting and can get people past NIL money, you're going to be stuck in the same situation. So a lot of it now is not as much on the coaching, but are you going to give this coach the proper tools and the proper players to work with to be competitive? And it's the same thing in, you know, in the NFL. You can hire a head coach, but if your general manager doesn't want to improve the roster, the coach can only do so much. So I think that's the first question that the athletic department at Penn State needs to answer to themselves is he the right guy? And if so, can we now give him the resources? Because if he's not, you have to move on and, you know, bring in somebody else who you're willing to give the resources to. But if you do think he's truly a good coach, you got to give him something to work with, and you've got to go spend some money to build a roster. And I don't know that much about Penn State NIL and basketball. You can probably touch on that a bit more, but I do think, you know, there's a question that needs to be answered. And then it's, well, how are we going to tool you with a roster to show that you're a good coach?
Well, you hit it with at Penn State, they have several high level sports. Mm-hmm. So you have football, obviously, takes the majority of the compensation, you know, the amount of money, the $20-21 million that schools are allowed to directly compensate their student athletes. gee, there's other schools that have both good football and basketball. Yes, they do. But do they also have good wrestling? Mm-hmm. Do they also have good hockey? Do they also have, you know, women's programs that are highly ranked? So Penn State has to think about where they distribute the dollars. And I also believe, Sean, that you have a situation where winning begets winning, losing begets losing. Indiana football, for example, give Kurt Cignetti all the credit in the world. But now that he's turned it around and they're winning, he's getting the money. Mm-hmm. So there's money in addition to that $21 million. It's called NIL, but it's money that's coming in from the outside, Sean.
Yeah, and it's funny how, you know, how you said Penn State has so many other sports that do get, you know, pretty decently funded from NIL money. It's opposite than most schools. It's your football and your basketball. They bring in all the money, and then it's can we build a couple other programs out of this? Penn State has very dominant programs in other sports that have overtaken basketball, which is just very different than what you typically see at big schools. It is usually football and basketball, your money makers. Everyone else is after that. Penn State's a little different because they've had such a strong wrestling and hockey pipeline. And like you said, I mean, women's volleyball has always been just incredible there. So they're an interesting situation with NIL because basketball was never on the levels of these other sports.
Well, and I also think there's another piece to this, especially when talking about basketball. There are the teams, the Dukes, Kentuckys. Duke turns their team over every year mm-hmm. with their one-and-done players. Then they bring in the next one-and-done player. I don't think Penn State will ever compete for that kind of player in basketball. They don't have the reputation. I can't picture them putting that kind of money into it. The other way is you build a team, meaning the players that come in that won't be one-and-done, they're not going to go to the NBA after 1 year. They'll stick around for 3 or 4 years, and you build something with it. Where I'm headed with this, Sean, is this Penn State basketball team is so young. They have 8 freshmen. 6 of those freshmen are in the regular rotation. They have 2 sophomores who are also part of the rotation. There's 1 senior. Now, the question I have for this team is, are they going to retain these players and be able to build a team with them? If that's the case, and I'm, you know, the athletic director, Pat Kraft at Penn State, I bring Mike Rhodes back for a chance to build something. If you let him go, you're right back at square one, Sean, and have to start building all over again.
Yeah, and I think, as you just put on that, if you are going to let him go, your next hire better be somebody at a smaller school who has some sophomores and juniors, I guess freshman, sophomore, junior, who want to follow him over to his new school, because that's how you can then rebuild a roster, just like we're seeing with football when, 20-something transfers from Iowa State are now on the Penn State roster. You need to replicate the same thing with basketball. So if you are going to make a change, it cannot be for somebody who doesn't have a following that you know, hey, we're going to get our starting 5 plus our first 3 guys off the bench to come over immediately because they love this coach. So that's something that, you know, if you do make a change in the interviewing process, you got to be assured that I've got guys who are going to come and we're going to, you know, kickstart this rebuild with some experience on guys who have already been in my personal rotation.
Well, ironically, Mike Rhodes' best year was his first year when he did exactly that. He brought some players from VCU. The other part to this equation is, reportedly, if they were to let Mike Rhodes go, there's a $9 million buyout. How about taking that $9 million and investing it into players as opposed to changing coaches, paying 2 different coaches? And I think that's the other thing to this too, Sean, is a coach coming here has to know things are going to change. I'm going to get the money to spend.
100%. And I think that's a great point. Can you take the roster you have, as you mentioned, a very young roster, which hopefully means a young roster with a lot of potential, and go and nab, you know, that junior who at North Carolina felt like they deserved a bigger role, and be like, hey, here, you're now the leader of this team. It's a young team, but you now get that extent. Can you get two of those guys to come insert themselves into your roster, help the younger guys grow, but also give you a little bit of that star power?
Exactly. And it leads to kind of the whole college sports program building. You know, how do you do it when you have this situation, limited funds? How do you allocate? I use the analogy of, if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates, how could you ever be upset with the manager because he's not given the players that the Yankees and Dodgers and so on, the major franchises, are being given? So unless you put the money in, I'm going to circle all the way back to what we started with, an early comment you made. Pat Kraft has to look at Mike Rhodes and say, A, is he a good enough coach? And B, is he a good enough coach for the funds we're providing him?
100%. And, you know, I don't know the college basketball landscape as well as I know college football. And you saw plenty of candidates in the college football world who are ready to jump ship to a bigger opportunity. Is Penn State in the basketball world realistically that bigger opportunity where, you know, I felt like the Penn State head coaching job in football was a very intriguing, you know, place to be. It's got a lot of history. The basketball program doesn't hold that same weight. So is there truly somebody else there that's going to be better, that's going to be better for Penn State? Or like you said, save your money, spend it on players instead of paying a coach to leave and then paying a new coach to come in and then needing to spend more money to build your roster?
Well, and here's the thing. Mike Rhodes, I think, fit the description, the resume you wanted. He won everywhere he was, going through, you know, the smaller schools, the mid-majors. VCU was his last stop. He had made it to three tournaments, NCAA tournaments, over a six-year span there. Definitely successful, definitely a winner. And he also has the advantage of being local. He's a Pennsylvania guy, grew up like, I don't know, 60, 90 minutes away, if that, from State College. So he's a guy you would think, if he could be successful here, he would stick around. That's the resume I think you're looking for. Now you just got to win.
Agreed. And I think that what my gut would tell me is, put some effort into this offseason, keep him around, see if these young guys can develop, see if you can get a couple other pieces. And then if we're in the same conversation next year, then it might be time to make a change.
It's funny you say that. That was my reaction a year ago with the women's coach, and it probably was time to let her go, or on that cusp, give her that one more year. Hey, they gave her every opportunity. This, I think, is the same way with Mike Rhodes. Give them the opportunity to retain these players. Give them the opportunity to grow the team. We'll see how it goes. All right, Sean, that's it. You did a fantastic job sitting in. How about we do it again next week?
Sounds great.
That's it for this edition of the show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.